covering Michigan and the world from his bunker below the bridge. Here is Steve Gruber.
Welcome back to it on this Wednesday. The Battle of Berkeley continues. You know, for a long time here on this program, we've talked about the degradation of the First Amendment and the fact that it's under attack. I've had people on this program openly laugh. Oh, the First Amendment, it's not under any. No problem with the First Amendment. Are you crazy? And I say, no, are you? I mean, seriously, do you see what's going on in this country and, you know, things that are being limited and what you can say, and you don't want to offend anybody, because if you offend anybody, good Lord. Anyhow, my next guest, Floyd Abrams, author of The Soul of the First Amendment and senior partner at the Cahill, Gordon, and Rindel Law Firm, and a preeminent First Amendment lawyer, Floyd Abrams. Sir, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
So tell me about the state of the First Amendment in America today. I mean, this is the founding principle, really, in of America in many ways, the ability to say what you think and believe without being shot, frankly, by your own government. What is the state of the First Amendment today?
Well, look, we still have more freedom legally protected than anywhere else in the world. But that said, there are a number of areas in which, you know, there's a siege going on. And I would say most of all on university campuses. I mean, if I had to pick one place where the situation sort of is, seems most in peril almost all the time, It's on universities, and Berkeley is just one example.
Yeah, you know, I heard Howard Dean here the other day, just a day or two ago, say that hate speech is not protected speech. The fact of the matter is, it certainly is protected.
Absolutely. That is just a flatly wrong statement. We protect it. Most of the world does not. I mean, even Canada does not. But we protect it. We protect it vigilantly. I mean, there are people in Europe who have gotten in bad legal trouble for carrying signs saying "Stop the Islamification of Belgium" or "Britain First," signs like that, which would be very familiar in the U.S. People have been found to have violated the law, have been fined. One person was banned from serving in any future political role for 10 years. I mean, that's almost the norm now in democratic countries around the world, but not here. And Howard Dean is just wrong.
Well, he is wrong about a whole host of things, that just being the latest example. But the fact of the matter is there are a whole host of efforts out there to limit and control what I'm allowed to say because I might offend someone. Hate speech has been so broadly defined now by people that are so worried about getting offended. It puts the First Amendment in peril because, yes, Antonin Scalia defended hate speech, if you will, and said that speech in general is protected in America. It's permissible unless it would lead to imminent violence is about the only limiting factor on that. But it's under attack every single day, is it not?
Well, look, remember, the First Amendment protects us only against the government. I mean, that's what it's supposed to do, and that's what it does. It doesn't protect against private pressures. It doesn't protect, you know, on your station, your boss or whoever hired you doing this or that. There's sort of a spirit of the First Amendment which goes well beyond protection from government. But as a legal matter, in terms of, you know, what the First Amendment itself protects us against, it is against one or another sort of governmental action.
That's right. I mean, if I say something that this station does not appreciate or put it on Facebook or whatever, I can be terminated for that if they don't feel it goes with their norms or acceptable standards or practices. I understand that. But hate speech, that's the place that I spend my most of my time, because government laws, legislation, rules, any limiting factors on hate speech put down by the government or put forth by the government should be illegal.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, sort of unambiguously. I mean, this is not a not a close legal issue in this country. And the courts have, you know, I've said this again and again, and enforced it again and again. You know, even with the most vile, you know, the Nazis can march here.
Well, they used to be able to. I wonder if that would happen now.
We've made a choice as a country to have a First Amendment which protects us in a wide range of circumstances, but as interpreted by the courts again and again, and this is by liberal and conservative jurists.
Well, let me ask you this. Point. Back in, you know, when I was growing up, big story out of Skokie, Illinois, when I was junior high school, about the Ku Klux Klan marching in the streets of Skokie, Illinois, I believe 1977, right? And the ACLU was there to defend them, and it happened. And all of whatever happened to the American Civil Liberties Union when they used to care about free speech and so forth? Because you don't hear them stand up and say, well, this is what's going on in Berkeley is wrong. I hear hardcore people like Bill Maher saying it's wrong. I hear people like Elizabeth Warren saying it's wrong. You know, but where is everybody?
I think you're right. I mean, the ACLU took an extraordinary and brave principled stand back in the 70s in favor of allowing the Nazis to march on the street in Skokie. And in the speech area in more recent years, you know, they've really been a lot more quiet. They've devoted themselves much more to what you could think of as sort of liberal political and social causes, reproductive rights and the like. But as the premier First Amendment defender in the country, I don't think in recent years they've been playing that role.
No, they're absent from the conversation. The American Civil Liberties Union looks out for the laws and the things that they care about, and other than that, they're barely a ghost of what they once were or were supposed to be, I think it's fair to say. What do you look at as you look out onto the horizon, Floyd? What are the biggest threats to free speech today in America?
Well, as I said, on college campuses, and there, of course, you know, some of the schools are public and some are private. The First Amendment only applies to public institutions. But private ones usually say that they abide by the First Amendment. There's a threat, I think. We don't know how real it is. You know, from Washington, I'm concerned about the potential use of the Espionage Act against journalists. It has not happened, and we'll just have to wait and see. But we have an espionage law drafted in World War I, which is written very broadly in a sort of an open invitation to an administration which is hostile to or angry at the press to come down on it with that. We'll just have to see if that happens. The other one is confidential sources of journalists, where, you know, we have protection at the state level in just about every state, but almost none with respect to the federal government. And that's an area which I think could lead to, significant conflict and problems.
We'll keep an eye on it, and I appreciate it. A good conversation. Floyd Abrams, author of The Soul of the First Amendment. Sir, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's good to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Good conversation, Mr. Floyd Abrams. We're going to talk about your health in general right after this.